Blog Talk Radio.
Gives you the chills, doesn't it? This is Dr. John Stamey, and welcome to Scarycast, one of the more interesting podcasts, I believe, on the internet. We've got a bunch of great announcements, and we've got an incredible guest. First of all, I want to introduce you to my co-host, the one and only Matt Delph. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm doing excellent. Glad to be here.
We are good. We are glad you're here, and thanks a lot for being here on this special Thursday night edition of Scarycast. And tonight, I've got a really great announcement, and then we're going to introduce our guest. And Matt, I'm going to let you introduce him because you know him. But we were selected yesterday to be the first internet affiliate for Ground Zero Radio, the number one paranormal podcast in America, with Clyde Lewis, and that's going to be broadcast every weeknight, Monday through Friday at 10 p.m., right here on Scarycast. That means that our regular podcasts are going to start at 8:30 so that we can be out of here and let Clyde Lewis have a great time talking about all the stuff he's going to talk about on Ground Zero. So we're very pleased to have that happen. It's going to start tomorrow night. And so anyway, Matt, take it away and introduce our guest.
All righty. Our guest, I'd met Rodney. It was probably, it's been a few years ago. And, of course, he's a fellow Bigfooter. I'd met him at Expedition Bigfoot Museum in Cary Log, North Georgia. And so I'd met him there. And after that, we just clicked, and we've been hanging out. We've had beer together. We've sang karaoke, all that good stuff. We've just become great friends and share knowledge. He's one of the good ones. He's a boots-on-the-ground researcher like myself and went down the rabbit hole just like the rest of us.
Yep, that's right. Once you get down there, you can't come out.
Very true. So
that is exactly right. Well, Rodney, we are glad to have you here on Scarycast, and we hope all you fans are going to tune in and listen to this grand broadcast. So I'm going to do one question, and then I'm going to let Matt take it away. But my first question is, and we started talking about this a little bit in the green room, but how exactly did you get started in this paranormal business?
Well, I've been doing the paranormal part of it for many, many years. Even the first books I remember checking out at the library when I was 6 or 7 years old, I would come home with a stack of ghost books and Loch Ness Monster books and cryptid books. And I've been interested in it my entire life. Had my first paranormal ghostly encounter at about age 3. Still remember it pretty vividly. This woman used to come up in this house we lived in, and she would wander in my room about bedtime every night and check on me. And for many years, I just assumed it was a friend of my mother's. Later on, I come to find out that the woman I described, my mother didn't know, but she looked remarkably a lot like the woman who had died in the house before we moved in there. So that was a kind of a shocker for me, but, you know, I'd always thought something was weird about that woman. She had a really strange glow about her, so I guess now it doesn't really shock me too much. But starting at about age 3 on up, I've had numerous encounters over the years. I even had a couple of situations where some of my friends, when we were teenagers, they had experienced some paranormal stuff with me. I grew up very close to the Goat Man legend of Floyd's Fork Park. In fact, I used to hang out there quite a bit and played soccer there and everything when I was young. But we would go out there often on, you know, weekend nights, just cruising around back in the 80s when you could do that and there wasn't much else to do. We'd cruise through the little industrial park area at night when there was nobody in there. We were doing so one night in my buddy's car, and we all see this girl walking down the side of the road, but she looked very out of place. Her dress was very probably Victorian era. And I looked at my friends and I said, "What in the hell is this girl doing walking through the industrial park at night, you know, by herself? We need to go check on her, make sure she's all right." So we looked in the rearview mirror and she was still there. So we flip around, start heading back down the road. About the time we get to about where she was at, she faded away in our headlights. It was gone. And all three of us were just sitting there for about 5 minutes trying to figure out what would happen. But that was probably one of the most vivid, I guess, full-body apparitions I'd ever seen. And, you know, she did – I didn't really pay attention if she was transparent or not, but it just looked strange. She didn't look normal. And I guess that's what caught my eye. But my friends were not really – believers until that night. After that night, they've been believers ever since. But so I've definitely had those kind of things going on for years. I was a Boy Scout, made it all the way up to where I would have been an Eagle Scout, but I turned 18 before I finished all my stuff. But during the years of Boy Scouting, I started to have encounters in the woods with things throwing objects at me and vocalizations and feeling like something was following me in the woods. But back then, I didn't really know what it was. When I was younger, we were still under the, the misconception that those cryptids were only on the West Coast. But I kept telling people, no, those things are here. And you know, they'd be like, nah, those things only live in the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, so I kind of just put it out of my mind. But I had probably at least 6 or 7 experiences like that as a Boy Scout to where we would just write it off as, oh, it's just people in the woods messing with us. But after my encounter in the gorge and start to retrospect and look back at those things, I realize now that the behaviors that I was experiencing were the same behaviors that Bigfoot witnesses describe, such as rock throwing and vocalizations and being paralleled in the woods while you're walking. All those things were going on numerous times. In Kentucky mostly, but there were some in southern Indiana as well. But I remember vividly all the times that it happened, and I just blew it off. So, yeah, that's I've always been interested, but then in 2004, at the time I was working in coal mines all over eastern Kentucky, putting camera systems mainly in the tool areas, because in the mine business it was a big black market for they were worth a lot of money on the black market, and they would get stolen quite frequently. So a lot of them had a big need for, at the time, that was 2004, was about the beginning of the DVR movement. So everything was going from VHS into digital world, and people were starting to be able to view cameras from home. And I was one of the first people to start doing that. But I got tired, you know, a lot of my work would be down Pipeville, Corbin, way down, Middlesboro, that way, Barberville, and got tired of driving back to Louisville all the time because I knew I was going to be right back there on Monday. So there was a lot of weekends. If it was nice in the summer, I would just stay in the gorge all weekend. Back then, I really didn't have much of a social media presence. We had message boards, group forums that we would meet on, and I was on a backpacking and hiking forum, and I posted. I said, "Hey, I'm going to be in the gorge this weekend. Really rather not stay there by myself. Things get a little weird in there sometimes. And if anybody would like to meet up with me, message me." Well, there's two guys, Chris and John. They were from North Carolina. they had been doing little sections of the Sheltowee Trace Trail. And so they messaged me and said, hey, we're going to be doing a leg of the Sheltowee Trace. We'll meet up with you Friday. And so I told them to meet me at the Wildcat Trailhead, which is in the, I guess, kind of the, I would say, Wolf County side of the Red River Gorge area. But it's also over towards the Clifty Wilderness, which is where we ended up camping. And that's really rugged. It's, the gorge is known to be a big, popular, touristy, campy place. But over in the Clifty Wilderness, people don't go there unless they're veteran outdoorsmen, really. It's pretty rugged. There's no people around. There's really no roads, no waters, other than what you can find in the creek, of course. And that, you know, that's exactly where I wanted to be. You get a little tired of the people partying all night and keeping you up, even in the Red River Gorge. That happens. You can hear them partying on the camp, on the ridge tops for miles. But so we go down there, and they met me at about, I guess it was probably 6 o'clock. It was early June, and it was a very unseasonably cool night. I remember that because, like, the day before, rain had just passed through and brought in a cold front. And so I guess when we got there, it was 6 o'clock, 6:30, get packed up, start hiking down the trail, and it's a good hour to get where we go. So get to the bottom of Wildcat Trail, take a left on Swift Camp Creek Trail, which goes right along Swift Camp Creek, and hiked it for about probably close to a mile. It breaks off and goes back up the hill. There's a little unmarked trail that keeps going along the river. And I went down about probably another quarter of a mile, and over on across the creek, I see this really beautiful spot where there's another creek coming out over there. And, you know, during June, it was fairly low water, so we crossed the creek pretty easily right there. And I said, you know, let's try this spot out. It looks really good. I've camped over there before, but never here. And we set up, got in there, and, of course, it was an ideal spot. Sitting right on the edge of Swift Camp Creek, and the little stream, a smaller creek that came out there, had kind of a waterfall back behind us, and there was a big ridge back behind where we were camping, kind of, I guess, if we were facing Swift Camp Creek, it would have been behind us. So we set up right there on the edge of that mouth, and, you know, got my fire pit together, built a fire, got the food going pretty quickly, because down there deep in that gully, it gets pretty dark. Even by 7:30, the sun's behind the mountains, so if you don't get things going pretty quickly, it'll get dark on you by 9, even in June. So got all that done, and we were finishing up. I had taken my pots down by the water, and I usually just put some little loose sand in there and water and let them sit, and then later on I'll scrub it out with that. We were sitting around the fire and just kind of carrying on. I'd brought a little bottle of bourbon with me. Had it in my pack and broke that out and had a couple of drinks and just kind of sitting around. I had actually had an acoustic guitar, so we were just messing around, singing, just having a little fun. And something decided to throw an object, and it went right over past me, right into the creek with a big splash. And at first, I just kind of thought maybe something rolled down that hill and bounced into the water, because, you know, that stuff does happen. And then about 15 minutes later, another one comes, and it hits the ground and rolls right up to the fire pit right in front of my foot. At that point, I look at the other guys, and I said, I think there's somebody up there messing with us. So I just kind of kicked the rock off and yelled something up that direction and kind of ignored it again. Probably about another 25 or 30 minutes later, something else comes flying through the woods, but this time it's a stick. A pretty good size, probably the size of my forearm, and is flipping end over end. I could see it just coming right through the edge of the firelight, and it hits right behind us. And at that point, I picked the thing up and threw it back up the hill and started hurling expletives in that direction, convinced there was people up there, even though the chances of other people in the Clifty Wilderness are fairly slim. So, but, you know, it does happen. When I did that, I heard a vocalization in return. At that point, that's when I started to realize I was not dealing with people. And the two other guys that were there, I mean, their hair stood up, and they were just petrified. They were not very experienced outdoorsmen. They were fairly new to this whole outdoor thing. And whatever they had just heard sent the fear of God right through them. So they just kind of stood there looking at me like, what was that? And I said, well, you really want to know what I think it was? Yeah, what do you think that was? And I said, that sounds like Bigfoot. And they're like, oh, really? Are you serious? I'm like, I've heard these sounds before, and you know, that's the only thing I can associate it with. There's nothing else around here that should sound that way. And so we were kind of still on edge. We went back to what we were doing a little bit and tried to not think about it anymore. And, of course, more vocalizations started to occur. I think maybe one more object came down, but really the vocalization started happening up right behind us upon the top of the ridge, kind of up probably to the right of that waterfall, maybe a couple hundred yards. And there was a little clearing up there. And when I looked up the hill, the moon was starting to come up over there, and I could see the shadow of something moving, you know, and it would like pop behind out from behind a tree and just and kind of stand there and sway for a minute. I'd try to hit it with my flashlight. I had one of those big old Coleman, huge 9-volt battery flashlights. Back in the day, those were pretty much the brightest thing you could get until the LED technology started to revolutionize a few years later. But, and yeah, I mean, I could hit up there, but I never could see what it was, but I could tell there was something there. And after I shine that light up there, it vocalized again, and then I hear two other vocalizations, but I could tell that they were, one of them was across the creek from where we had just came. The other one was down further, probably on this, it appeared to be on the same side of the creek that we were on, but further down where we hadn't been. So at that point, I know that I'm dealing with at least three of them. And it was really, I have to say, I was quite unnerved. The only thing I carried with me at a time was a machete and a walking stick. I didn't carry any firearms, even though I did start carrying firearms in there later, and it wasn't because of Bigfoot. It was because we did have a run-in one night with a damn near manic lunatic that was completely drunk out of his mind and stumbled through my campsite, and we couldn't get him out of there. So after that night, one of my guys that night had a pistol with him, and I decided it was probably a good idea to keep one from that point on. But back then I didn't have one, and I knew that if that thing came down here, I didn't really have much recourse. But, you know, I was going to try to do best I could. And at some point, after the vocalizations and the answers, it starts running down the hill, and I can hear it. I mean, it sounds like just this huge beast just breaking saplings all the way down the side of this hill. But I can't see it. The forest is so dense in there. Even that flashlight, unless you've got a clearing like that one spot that I was able to hit through, I mean, you're probably only getting 50 or 60 feet in there. It's just dense, heavy old-growth forest. But I could hear it, you know, and it sounded like you could feel every footstep. It sounded like a bull running down the side of the hill. It just boom, 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 and snap, and snap. And then it would kind of grunt and make these low, real low-frequency noises that it sounded like it was probably maybe within 75 or 100 feet of us. I never could see it, but I knew it was there. And once that happened, we were, you know, the other guys had already gotten in their tent at this point. They're like, I don't know, I guess they thought that was going to save them, that little one inch of nylon, but I guess they felt more secure in there. But anyway, I knew that I was going to stand out guard because basically I was the only one that had any experience in the woods, period, and I felt it was my duty since I drug them down in there that I was going to be the one to face whatever this thing was. So I guess it's probably 75, 100 feet away, and it's grunting and stuff, and I scream at it, try to hit it with a flashlight. I think I ended up picking up another object, throwing it in its direction. It made another vocalization, and then it took off back towards that waterfall and up the side of the ridge, and it vocalized a few more times on a lower level, but I could tell that it was getting further away, and I'm thinking, oh, this is awesome. You know, right now it's probably, I don't know, 11:30, and I'm thinking, God, I scared it off. It's gone. Cool. So I hang around for about 20 minutes just making sure I don't hear anything else, and I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to try to maybe go in my tent and sleep. At that time, I still used a tent. I do not use a tent anymore. I sleep in a hammock, but that time I still did. My body could still tolerate laying on the ground. And I guess I was kind of halfway trying to one-eye sleep. And it probably, I guess an hour or so had passed. It was probably close to 1, 1:30. I think I looked at my watch. It was about 1:15, 1:30. And I hear just something messing with my pots and pans down by the creek, which is probably 150, maybe 100, 150 yards tops. Wasn't really far away. It might have even been less than that. I could get there in about, you know, a good maybe 45-second walk or so, maybe a minute. So I pop out, unzip my little screen on my tent, and I stick the flashlight out, and I yell something down there, and I see something. I'm thinking, I'm just convinced it's raccoons because I've had plenty of experience with them trying to steal my cookware and just scrub what they get to eat out of it, I guess. But when I hit that object with my flashlight this time, I noticed it was big, but it was actually hunkered down because it was playing with my pots. Initially, I thought it was a black bear. So I screamed at it. Most of the time, a black bear will run off unless it's a mom with cubs. But when I did, the reaction I got was not what I expected. This thing stood up. And I followed it with my flashlight. It stood up and turned around and looked at me through my pots and looked right in that beam of light for what seemed like forever, but it was probably maybe a 10 or seconds or not even that long. And it screamed really loud. It put its hand up in front of the light, and it took off hauling back up the top of that ridge again. This time it was vocalizing pretty hard the whole way. But I had seen its face dead on. And at that distance at night, when you got a flashlight on it, you could see it pretty good. And I knew it was not a bear, and it had to have been somewhere between 8 and 9 foot tall, and it looked like it weighed every bit of, oh, I would have to guess, but probably 700, 800, maybe 900 pounds. It was so large that your standard doorway, if it were to walk through that door, it would have had to turn sideways and duck because its shoulders would have hit both sides of the door frame. It was just very broad in the shoulders. Covered in dark reddish brown hair, everywhere except for its face. His face was completely hairless. There was hair underneath its chin, and I could see its eyes, and they didn't really glow, at least not at that point, but its nose was really noticeable is what I remember the most. It didn't look like a gorilla. It looked almost like a human, like a hominid of some kind. It had a very fat, wide nose that was kind of smashed on its face. And it had very pronounced brow line. I couldn't really tell. It didn't seem to have a conical type head, but there was a lot of hair there, so I really couldn't get a good look at in the amount of time that I had. You know, it was just going off my memory, because really 15 seconds or whatever that was went pretty fast. But I was just shocked. Because I'd never seen anything like that before, and it's a life-changing event. I've never been able to unsee it. I can't go anywhere with a large chunk of forest where my head's not out the window trying to look in there and see what I see. And I travel quite a bit doing service work all over the state of Kentucky, sometimes Indiana, Tennessee, West Virginia. And there's a lot of times where I'll be just driving, and I'll just pull over and take a break and walk up into the woods just looking, because I can just feel them. I know they're there. But ever since that day, I've never been able to stop looking for them. And people find out that I had seen them, and they start telling me their stories. And people around here, you know, you get a lot of people poking fun at you because they don't understand, and it doesn't really bother me, because had I not seen that thing, I would have never really understood either. But once you do, it's a life-changing. And I'll tell them, you know, it sounds funny, but I swear to God, this is what I saw. Then I've had numerous people come forward and tell me their stories about, you know, they didn't come out because people would make fun of them or whatever, but they would finally come out and tell their story. It was almost taboo for many years to talk about these things around here. I started to figure out the more research I did that they were all over Kentucky, and there were several different names for them. They were called Yahoo at one point. Daniel Boone had called them a Yahoo. In fact, there's a place called Yahoo Falls down in Big South Fork that's named after where he apparently said he threw one off of the cliff after he had shot it. That's how the legend goes anyway. But he said it was a man-like creature, and he called it a Yahoo or a Yahoo. And then later on, I heard about the wood booger. I didn't know what a wood booger was, but all my life I'd always heard the term boogeyman. Well, the origin of that term apparently comes from wood booger. People would say, yeah, it's the wood boogers back in those woods. And then they would just kind of shorten it to booger. And at some point, it just became boogeyman in certain areas. And you start to realize that you go around other communities and they all got little names for it, like the Thing up here in Trimble County. I think they called it the Trimble County Thing or the Beast of Trimble County, something like that. There was the Wild Man in Lawrenceburg. And I started to really put together all these legends and realized that, yeah, I was completely right as a kid that they were here. We just didn't really know because, you know, we were all had no way of connecting our stories until the internet became a thing. But it's a life-changing path. Me being in the paranormal world, I've always kind of approached my research a little different. So I would bring in some of the tools I used to ghost hunt, like my ovulus and some recorders. And I've actually captured EVPs in the forest where I was in a Bigfoot area that were actually more ghostly EVPs, like disembodied voices and children laughing and things of that nature. So basically, I've pretty much come to the conclusion that all this stuff somehow is related. And I don't really know how, and my goal is to figure out how these things connect together. But I believe that all of these paranormal events somehow are tied within one another, and especially after all the weird balls of light and things of that nature that I've captured on video in some of these Bigfoot areas that don't make any sense when it comes to a flesh and blood creature. So some people will be like, oh, he's on the woo kick, he's talking crazy, but I've got documented proof that there are weird balls of light that happen in many active Bigfoot areas, and I don't know what they are. But I have theories, but I also don't really believe that these things stay in a physical shape. I think there's something, we're dealing with something else here. We're not dealing with a normal creature that's flesh and blood like us. These things have something that I can't explain, but I can feel it. And the Native Americans always said the same thing about it. And actually, I'm Native American descent as well, and my intuitions are super keen. That there's something more to these things than what the flesh and blood people want to believe. And I'm going to stick to it. That's my belief. They can make fun of me all they want, but I know what I've seen and I know what I feel. And that's kind of the way I approach it. I just kind of go on that route. And now I still do some ghost hunting stuff as well, paths. So I feel spirits and presences everywhere I go, and that's been going on since I was a child, too. My wife is a medium, and that's one of the things that brought us together pretty close. We sleep with the television on at night, because if I don't, I will wake up with things trying to communicate with me and my wife as well. There's nights I wake up and just sit and listen to her while she's having a full-blown conversation with something in her sleep. And even with the TV on, but when there's no background noise, it seems to even be worse. And I don't know, you know, there's a lot of people out there that explain those type of things as well. Some people have that gift, and there's some that'll tell you they've never felt anything. And I guess those people just don't have that perception. I don't know. Matt seems to. We've talked about it. And we have a lot of common ground on a lot of areas when it comes to that stuff. But yeah, it's And I would never call myself an expert. As long as I've been doing this, I am still a fledgling student because I know a lot of things about how they act and where they live and where they go and things that they do. But I still don't know what they are, and I still want to know what they are. And I guess until the day that I think that I've found out enough, I'm going to keep doing this for the rest of my life. It's almost a curse, but it's also fun too.
You had mentioned, Rodney, like the one thing that I noticed whenever I had my encounter, 1996, it threw the stick and it was end over end. Like that's the first time
exactly.
I met somebody else. Yeah, it was end over end. Whenever it threw a stick at me.
Yeah, they throw them. They throw them like I would a hatchet.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it comes flying past my head. And I seen it, but I couldn't get a good look at the face. But mine was more orangutan type, and it was slanky and slinky. But that whole area he's talking about, yeah, there are no experts in this. But if you do this long enough, then you're going to come up to stuff where you start seeing orbs. You're going to see tracks stopping in the middle of nowhere. And in these areas, like you said, there's also a lot of paranormal stuff, and that's where we'll do SD sessions out there in the woods. We will talk to the forest. We'll, do the ghost stuff, because it's a high strange event area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Episodes of high strangeness have surrounded me for years. In fact, my wife hates it because it doesn't happen so much now with LED bulbs, but incandescent light bulbs. If I was angry and was walking through a room, it would blow out all the time. And so she would comment about my energy being off again because I'm blowing lights. Or I would make electronic equipment stop working. My watches would quit working. Just weird things like that, too. So I don't know if that's part of it or not. But it's just one of those things that happens around me. That's why when the other night when those things were happening, I said, welcome to my world, Matt. How strangeness. I probably caused it.
Yeah, that was odd.
Yeah, there's dites. I remember years ago, back in I guess it was 1999, that's when Waverly Hills was still completely closed down. I've been in and out of there my whole life. We used to sneak in there so long, but at this point I had a VHS camcorder with two brand new charge batteries. I get in that building, first battery's dead in 5 minutes. I put the second battery in, it is dead in another 5 minutes, and I was out. So I got about 10 minutes worth of video, and then I was just done because I didn't have any way to charge anymore. Back then they didn't have any electricity in there, but the energy in certain places is like that, too. It just pulls the power right out of everything you have. And some of the Bigfoot areas that I've been in are like that, too. We used to run a DVR in there, and we would run it off a deep cycle marine battery and a inverter, and then get one of those little Harbor Freight DVRs and about four cameras and string them up all around us and put a monitor up, and we would sit there at the camp and watch what we called Squatch TV. And we would see all kinds of crazy stuff in those cameras, just sitting there looking at them all night. At one point, I remember something sticking its hand through the image and pulling the camera down. I'm like, did you see that? We had some strange stuff. One night, we were putting these driveway sensors out about 200 yards away from us, and we were taping them to the fence with gaffer's tape, I guess the equivalent of what Gorilla tape is now, but it was like the gaffer's tape. All of a sudden, my friend Steve Wynn, he's one of my good friends, we had just walked back from putting them up. As soon as we get back, it starts going nuts. So I walked back over there where we were just at. Something had ripped that thing off the fence, just ripped right through that gaffer's tape, which if you ever tried to rip a good piece of gaffer's tape that's ripped 4, 5, 6 times, you're not going to do it without a knife. This thing was ripped clean off, and they threw it down the drive about 30 feet. And we were the only people there, so there was no humans around. But there's many weird things like that that happened to us. We've had our trail cameras ripped off of trees, and I quit using straps a long time ago because those things were like shoestrings to them. So we would use chains instead and padlock them on there. They'd break right through the chain links. And if it's a human, they're going to steal your camera and your SD card. Whatever these things was, they would smash out the camera and smash all the IR lenses out of it and then chuck it down the hill. D card's still in it. Batteries are still in it. You know, camera's still there. So I'm really positive that wasn't a human that did that either. And we retrieved some of the SD cards and look at them. And where there should have been an image, it was black. Like the image was, need I say, maybe magnetically altered. I don't know, something. But some kind of interference that doesn't make any sense had made that image just black. And I've seen that on numerous trail cameras, and to the point where I quit using them. They're useless. You might catch a hairy arm for a second or something sometime, but these things, they could smell us. You can't outsmart them. You're not going to catch them with a trail camera. And I will lay money down now that nobody will ever put body. I really don't believe it's possible. I don't think anybody will ever get one. These things have been around forever, and nobody's came up with one yet. And there's a $1 million bounty on their head right now, or even more than that, probably. There's a reason why nobody can find these things.
Well, yes. Actually, there has been bodies, but Big Brother tends to intervene.
There are those.
So you won't have any... Yeah, it won't be exposed unless Big Brother says it's okay. But
that too.
Yeah, exactly. But
that
you were
too,
talking
yeah.
about. I'm kind of curious now. I'm going to switch the table around here, or go a different direction here.
All right.
The demonic house that you got.
Oh yeah.
About getting it when you first started in the house, first started. Realizing something was off.
Yeah, so back in 2008, this house, it's two houses down from my wife's parents. It's a three-house road. There's literally only three houses on there, and they all have about five-acre plots. And it sat vacant I don't know how long. So finally one day, we were tired of living where we were at anyway, and we went up there and checked it out. You know, it's sitting there. I mean, it had this tremendously beautiful back porch that somebody had built that was covered. And the base frame of this porch was made out of railroad ties. I mean, it was beautiful. And I was just fell in love with it, but it felt a little odd. I just kind of blew it off because it was on 5 acres, two houses down from my in-laws. Couldn't figure out why it wasn't rented. I think I figured out later on why nobody stayed in it long. So we move in. Finally get the number from the landlord. He didn't even have it on the market at the time, but he decided that he was going to rent it to us. And we hadn't been in there. I guess we had just been in there about 5 or 6 days. My wife's going down the steps to the basement, and she hears a voice, and it calls her Judy. And my wife, I'm upstairs cooking in the kitchen at the time, and I hear my wife scream at this thing and say, "Don't you call me Judy, bitch." You know, that's pretty much what she said. "It ain't my damn name." And she comes up the stairs. I said, "Who the hell are you talking to?" She said, "Something down there just called me Judy." And I told it, "I ain't Judy, bitch."
I can see her saying that.
I said, "Well, oh yeah, you could totally see that." She said, "I was trying to kick its ass, but I couldn't see it." My wife's feisty.
That's her, for sure.
And I'm like, "What do you think that was?" She said, "I don't know. Something talked to me down there." I said, "Okay. Well, I don't think anything else happened that night, but a couple days later, we're out back we had just put a porch swing out on that porch, and I'm sitting there swinging back and forth, and I look down. One of the railroad ties, the way it was built, it came out of the deck. Pretty sure there used to be a table on it. But written on the back of that in black Sharpie, it said, "Joe loves Judy." And I look at my wife and said, "Do you see that?" She said, "What?" I said, look at that right here on the back of this railroad tie." She said, "Holy shit, are you kidding me?" I said, "No, there's that Judy name again." So, what in the hell? What's going on here? So now we're really curious about who this Judy person is. Well, over the next course of probably the next couple of months, the police show up not once, not twice, but at least three times looking for somebody named Judy Wallace, to the point to where one day my wife looked out the front door and they're knocking on the front porch. We didn't use that door because that front porch had a bunch of really overgrown taxus shrubs, and they were just overgrown over the porch. So we used that back door where the big deck was. That was our main entrance. So she goes towards the back door, and the policeman sees her go in that direction. He runs around the house real quick and, like, almost has his gun drawn. And she's like, oh, hold on a minute. What are you doing? He's like, I'm looking for Judy Wallace, and I don't know who that is. That's not me. She had to prove to them with her ID that it was not her. And she said, this is about the third time you all been here. And the police department at the time was literally 400 yards up the road from us. I mean, you could almost see it from my house. She said, tell your people there, Judy Wallace doesn't live here. We moved into a vacant house. We don't know who she is. And so that finally seemed to calm that down. But we also kept getting weird things in the mail for her. Court summons and other weird stuff, but we never could figure out who Judy Wallace was. Never knew, the landlord didn't know who she was. So if she did live there, she didn't live there officially on the lease.
So were the cops, did you ask them how they, or why they had showed up there? What was up with Judy that they would go there to that house?
She apparently had some warrants for something. I don't know if it was business, like some of the mail we got was from the IRS and from some courts. So I think she had missed a court date. And I don't know what it related to. We never did open the mail. We just kind of left it in a stack. I mean, I asked her, I said, you know, or asked the policeman, I said, you know, what did she do? Well, I can't discuss that with you right now, but, you know, I'm not allowed to say. I said, well, it's awfully bad, apparently, because y'all have been here three times, and we've told you every time that woman doesn't live here. So, and I never did figure out the extent of what she was wanted for, but I'm thinking it was probably either something criminal, I would have guessed, via the amount of urgency they kept showing up for. But we couldn't figure out what happened to her. I looked everywhere. I even did internet searches. I tried everything. Never did find her, but that name kept coming up. Probably for the next year, mail kept showing up there. Police never did come back after that third time. That was just some of the other weird stuff. To this date, I always wonder if Judy was in those woods buried somewhere, just kind of stuck in the back of my head because of some of the weird things that happened around there. But speaking of weird things that happened, about, I guess, probably 2 weeks after that first Judy event, I'm at band practice, and my wife, she likes to call when I'm in the middle of a song, and I'll blow her off because I'm in the middle of a song. Well, this time she kept calling back to back to back, so I knew something was up. So stopped the band real quick, and I walked outside. I said, I'll be right back. And she's like, you got to get here. I could hear, she said, I heard girl and or lady in the woods screaming, help me, help me, help me. It scared her so bad that she had actually called the police, and they actually came out and were looking around to figure out if that was, it sounded like a woman that was being attacked. They never did find the source of it. And by the time I got home, I even went down in the woods and I never found it either or heard anything. But my wife is also a medium, so I don't know if she was seeing an apparition or what, but I still wonder if that was Judy. Don't really know. I guess probably maybe another week or so after that, my daughter is going downstairs. The way this kitchen was laid out, it was one of those back doors where you came in the back door and you could go straight down the steps or you could take a right and go into the kitchen with one step up. So she was going through the kitchen and going downstairs because down there was a toy room, and she would only go down in that room when I was home or mom was home. She didn't like that basement. But she went down there and went back and apparently some when she got about halfway down the steps, I had a an Indian display case hanging on my wall. It was wooden with plexiglass. It had some red felt in it, and it had a choker, an arrow, and an arrowhead or two that I had placed in there, and they were just hanging on my wall, just kind of really just showing my Native American heritage. It fell off the wall, and she's convinced that she did it. So I go up, take a look at it, and when I get up there, it's not sitting right off the wall on the floor. It's 6 feet out in the middle of the kitchen, like something threw it off my wall. So I know that my daughter didn't do it. She kept telling me, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. And I said, I believe you. And I told my wife, you know, my wife and I talked about it. So there's no way she'd knock that off the wall. It's been thrown across the kitchen. One of the events in that kitchen, a couple of days later, we were downstairs. I'd put a TV room down in the basement. We would sit down there and watch TV. Well, I hear a big bam. Like, what is that sound? Figured maybe it was a dog. We had a cat at the time, and we had a couple of little dogs, but they really didn't get into much trouble. They couldn't do much that would make that kind of noise. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go upstairs and check on it. So I get up there and look. Right when you come up the steps, I could see the cabinets over there on that back wall, and my cabinet door is open, and one of my bowls is broken in the middle of my kitchen floor. Once again, it's about 4 or 5 foot out from the cabinet. So it didn't just fall off the edge of the shelf and hit the counter. This thing was thrown out. And that happened more than once. One of the other weird events that would go on in that house is I would be downstairs, and because my in-laws lived two doors down, I didn't really have to keep an eye. At the time, my youngest daughter was only 9. And she liked to go down to Mimi's house, and she would just wander down there. She would call her on the phone, or I would call her and say, hey, Sierra's going to walk down. So keep an eye out for her, and she would walk down there. And so a lot of times she would just go down there without even telling me and just forget to let me know. And I'd be in the basement and wouldn't know she was gone, and I hear somebody running up and down the hallway. And this happened numerous times. The first time it happened to me was definitely probably the most striking to me because it scared the hell out of me. I walk upstairs. I'm getting right around the corner into the hallway and go, Sierra, what the hell are you doing? You know, I'm watching a movie down there. You sound like a pack of elephants. Well, I get around the corner, and there ain't a soul in that house but me. I'm the only person home. And I stood there for a minute. I went and walked into every room, closets, to make sure nobody was playing a game with me, because she would do that sometimes, but nope, she was gone. I got on the phone, and I called my mother-in-law, said, Siri, I'm there with you. She said, yeah, she'd been down here for a while. I said, all right, that's all I need to know. She goes, why, what's wrong? I said, I just fully heard somebody running up and down this hall, not to the point that I came out of my basement to see what was going on. And so she's like, oh, really? We had already told her some of the stuff that had been going on. She's kind of a believer, too. She's had some issues or experiences over the years. But, yeah, that's one of the other events.
Go ahead. I was going to ask, okay, you said that you had dogs and cats and stuff. Did the cats or dogs ever act strange or in certain rooms? And have you noticed any, like, smell or temperature change?
That was one of the things I was going to say. Our dogs really didn't mess in the house much when we were there. But if we left that house and left them in there, something would literally scare the shit out of those dogs. And we would come home to the world's biggest mess in that kitchen, because we would just kind of block them off in that kitchen where the linoleum was, because it was easier to clean up than carpet. And I would come home to a sight that looked like they exploded. And they were literally just looking at me like they were terrified. So something was messing with those dogs while we were gone. And to the point that they would whine when I started to leave because they didn't want to be in there by themselves. And I would take – sometimes I would take my little Yorkie with me. And especially later on, I began to take him with me a lot because he didn't want to be home by himself at all. The other one, the other dog ended up becoming an outdoor dog because it was just, it liked it outside. It didn't want to be in the house. We'd bring him in when it got cold or whatever, but he had a big run chain that, a running run that probably went 70 or 80 feet out into the yard, and that's what he liked to do, is just run back and forth. So, but at the time, I think they're, when they were really young, they were both in the house. But as soon as he got about six or seven months old, it was time to put him outside because he would just chew the living hell out of everything. The Yorkie never was bad, so he stayed in the house with us. But the cats, the cat would, there was times where the cat would be meowing and looking up in the air at something, and, you know, like it sees something I didn't see. We definitely noticed that, too.
Well, cats can see across the veil, so.
Oh, yeah.
Supposedly.
Definitely. Yeah.
That is that.
Now, one of the other weird things that happened in there was my youngest daughter, Sierra is her name, the same one that used to go to Mimi's house all the time. Well, one day, my wife is, in fact, I was at band practice again. My wife is looking for my daughter. She can't find her anywhere. She's searching the whole house. And she searched for, I think, a couple of hours. Searched every room, every chair, everything. Couldn't find her nowhere. She's freaking out. She calls me at practice, makes me come home. She had already called the police and reported her that she couldn't find her. Of course, you know, they make you wait 24 to 48 hours before they'll really do anything. But they kind of stopped by and just took a look, and just because they were so close. But we were freaking out. We'd been down everywhere between our house and in the backyard, between the neighbors behind us and on the way to Mimi's house to see if there was anywhere she could have been. Couldn't find her anywhere. We finally go through the house one more time. My wife goes in the basement. She yells my daughter's name, and all of a sudden my daughter comes out from under a blanket in this big double papasan chair we had down in the corner of the basement den. And we had looked in that chair two or three times. And I know she wasn't in that chair, but that's where she ended up coming out. It was almost like she went to a portal and was in another dimension somewhere the whole time we were looking for her. And she claims she never left it. She went to sleep in that chair the whole time. And she still remembers this to this day, and we can't explain what happened. That was pretty unnerving. And, you know, initially I was thinking it was ghosts, but these were beyond residual. There was one night that I'm sleeping on. We had another big papasan on the back deck, the big covered deck. And in the summertime when it was real hot and stormy, or when it was starting to cool off and be stormy, I would lay out there and just listen to the rain. My wife was working night shift at the prison. That's the other thing I wanted to mention. Off my front porch, I could see all three correctional facilities from LaGrange, Kentucky. So there's Luther Luckett, KSR, Kentucky State Reformatory, and Rotor Correctional Complex are all directly across the street from me in that house. So something could have came from over there. Who knows? But sleeping on that back deck in that pompousan chair, and I fall asleep, but I wake up because I had a succubus experience. And I always thought those were fictional, but I remember having a very vivid, erotic dream and a woman whispering in my ear. And it was so real, and the whisper was so loud that it woke me up out of my sleep, and I almost jumped out of that papasan chair. And those are usually associated with demonic activity. And I remember the dream went from erotic to evil in about 3 seconds, and that was right about the time that I woke up when this beast was transforming into whatever it actually was. And I had really never even pondered the idea of those experiences. I'd read about them in books, but I couldn't relate. But now I can, and it was the weirdest thing I could ever explain. I've never really had anything else happen like that to me before or since. And then there was something else. We had heard several voices in that house that just didn't sound. They were sound low sounding, like I don't know, just evil sounding voices. We were there 5 years total, I guess. There wasn't any time there that would where something wasn't going on. We had become immune to it. We started to accept the fact that that ghost or whatever it was, demon, liked to play tricks on me. I always carry a Zippo lighter because I don't lose those. I've got Zippos that I've had since I was a kid. And I would set my Zippo and my keys on, we had like a big island counter there in the kitchen. I would sit them on there every day when I got home. After about the first 2 or 3 weeks, they started disappearing. And I thought maybe my daughter was doing it, playing with them and losing them. But when I confronted her about it, I could tell by her responses that she wasn't lying to me. And eventually I ended up finding my lighter and my keys in the bottom of her toy room closet. And that's the room she doesn't like. So the only time she's ever in that toy room is if I'm sitting in that room down in front of there. And she really didn't play in there a whole lot. Just because she had plenty of stuff in her own room and she didn't like to go down there by herself. But in the bottom of her toy box, I find my keys and my lighter. And she says, "I didn't do that, Daddy. I did not put those there." And I knew she was telling me the truth. Several other times they disappeared. Tricksters for sure. Now, my wife, the thing that would happen to my wife, she was compelled to clean in that house to the point where she would stay up all night cleaning. And she's never been an OCD cleaner like that. I mean, she'll get on some rampages, but not like that. This was all the time. And she said, "I don't know what it is about this house. I can't sleep. It wants me to clean all night." And it's never happened anywhere else that we've ever lived other than that house. And I don't know what was going on there either, but it was like she had to get the thing out of there. It's almost like she felt compelled to clean the spirit out of the house. But it didn't work. Now, oddly enough, that house today is pretty clean. And weirdly enough, my sister ended up coming to live in that house probably 5 years after we moved out of it. And it had been through four other people that lasted about 6 months apiece. In fact, the last ones that left everything they had there, almost. They just left everything there. But after that house was empty the last time, I went in there with some blessed water and some sage, and I kicked that thing out of that house. I went and saged every single room. As I was in it, I'd open the window and make it go out the window. And I did that for several hours. And then I did it one more time before she moved in. She's never had any experiences that we had there. So I believe I was successfully able to cleanse whatever it was. But one of the other things we found when we moved out of that house, and I know I didn't put it there because I will not play with these things, found a Ouija board in my garage that was not in there when I moved in that house. And we didn't put it there. So I'm going to getting all my stuff out of the garage. I find that Ouija board. I show it to my wife. She said, "Are you freaking kidding me? Where'd that come from?" I said, "I don't know. It's sitting in here in the shelf in the garage." And I took it straight out to my burn pile and I burned it. Because I had an experience when I was younger with a Ouija board that we had made according to the specific instructions of the witch's handbook, because we thought it was cool to dabble and all that stuff. We ended up bringing something into my friend's house that caused all kinds of chaos there. So I do not take the Ouija board lightly. In fact, I don't think it's a tool that anybody should mess with if they don't know what they're doing. When you open those doors, things can come in. I don't know how that Ouija board got in that house, and it still bothers me to this day.
Yeah, a Ouija board, it's just basically a tool. You can use, sure. You can make a Ouija board out of anything. It's just a tool to actually do the, you know,
yeah,
to
totally.
Make contact.
It's a more or less a prop, yeah.
Yeah. I noticed one thing that you said. Okay, I'm going to kind of go on the quantum side of things here with this ghost paranormal activity. A lot of times you'll get a demon and it'll attach itself to a certain object or whatever. But now this is going to sound crazy, but okay. In the Donaldson House,
not to me.
1985, they had, you had three different entities from three different time frames currently living in this one area. So they were communicating through a computer in 1985. So,
yeah,
the consciousness level, so you got different parallel of timeline. So you've got, and they were having the paranormal activity stuff going on. But what it was is like the timelines were overlapping each other in the same area. So this consciousness, because time is basically non-existent. So you've got, you could have somebody currently living in that house in their consciousness realm, and then you're doing it through your timeline, and then could be a future timeline. And it made me think of that whenever you said that you couldn't see your daughter.
Yeah, like the parallel dimension.
She kind of shifted over. Yeah, kind of like she shifted over. But are you getting that echo whenever I talk?
Not on my end. I don't hear an echo on you.
Okay, because I'm hearing an echo.
Ready to ask. Are you hearing the echo?
Nope, I can't hear it, but I guess you guys can.
It's the echo of the lady. It was just a lady.
Yep, I didn't hear it at all.
I can hear an echo.
I don't know what that is. Technical. Some kind of weird technical thing. Once I get to talking about this stuff, it's amazing that more weird things haven't happened.
Well, it's really interesting what happened on Tuesday night. I set up the show. Now I'm hearing myself echo. Okay. I set up the show on Blog Talk Radio. And I called in about 12 minutes till the hour. And I got the message that, what's the message I got the first time? Well,
there are no shows scheduled.
Yes, there are no shows scheduled. And then Matt calls me, and I'm not answering Matt because I'm trying to reschedule the show. And I did, and I got the same thing. But then Matt said that he and maybe you were also being able to get in, but I couldn't get in.
Yeah. I never was able to, but Matt was. It was always telling me that there were no shows scheduled, and it would go goodbye and hang up on me.
It said waiting for host.
Ron, that's what happens when you mess with Scarycast.
Hey, man. Especially if you're a conduit like me, if something weird, high strangeness is going to happen, it's going to happen around me. Believe me. So, I always wonder if these creatures pick people like me. Because they know that I can see them.
Absolutely.
That's one of my theories.
You walk around with a light bulb above your head to some of these entities. Strange events will just follow you around. Your consciousness
absolutely.
Levels higher.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I believe in lucid dreaming and several other things that I've actually proven that I believe works, and I believe that I can manifest anything that I want to happen and make it happen. In fact, I have over the years. So anything's possible if you're a person like me that's just wide awake and understands that we're not in just three dimensions. And Matt's the same way. That's why we click.
I can go into an area and I've got high energy. I can go into an area and I can feel if something's present or there or not. It's like I'm out in the field. You know, George and all them, George Wrigley and all them, they'll tell me, they'll go, Matt, get your spidey sense going. Let's see what's out here. And
right.
Usually tell them if there's, I know if there's something there or not.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Well, you know, I guess what I specialize in is mind speak because I'm such a good friend of Robin McCrae's. Can I just be very, I don't care what anybody on listening to the show says. I talk to dead people. I talk to dead musicians, and they actually write music through me. And I've learned a lot about their personal lives from them because I am a musician. I was a very good composer when I was in high school and college. I have a degree in performance and composition. But, I mean, I talk to Mozart and George Gershwin on the red, and I know it's them because they tell me things that a regular spirit couldn't know. And they interact with Google and with Facebook. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, seems like it.
Well, here's what happened.
Appear on your timeline, or
well, no. Here's what happened. Okay, so I'm sitting there. I work for Transamerica, the life insurance company, and I'm sitting there about 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon, berserk. And then I restarted it, and I couldn't get into Facebook. And I said, "Oh my God, no, something's wrong here because I run about 10 Comic-Cons." And, you know, I've created every one of those Comic-Cons underneath my name. And I created it actually under my grandfather's name. So then when I tried to recover, it said, just send us a copy of your driver's license. I said, oh, my God, I don't have a copy of Joseph Stamey. So anyway, the voice said very matter-of-factly, don't worry. Just don't worry. I said, okay, I won't worry. So about 5 days, as I started creating John Stamey, it's the first time I ever had a Facebook. This was like 6 months ago. And then all of a sudden, Facebook started sending me all the Joseph Stamey friends, like it knew who I was. Okay? So it sent me about 100, and I kept adding them. I said, that's okay. I'll get everybody back. We'll see what happens. So then here came Ron Patton. And I said, I don't know if I know him or not, but I'll send, the old standard message that I send. Hey, how's it going? This is John, and I run Scarycast, and glad, you know, that's why I added you as a friend. So he comes back with a message to me, you know, I don't know you, but tell me about Scarycast. Ron Patton is the executive producer of Ground Zero, the podcast with Clyde Lewis. The number one paranormal podcast in the world. So, you know, we start talking, and by Saturday afternoon, we're talking on the phone like we've been friends forever. And
pretty cool.
2 weeks later, I'm on Clyde's show. He said it was a good show. And then now, Scarycast is the actual first internet partner for Ground Zero podcast. I mean, that was no Ron. That was no accident, was it?
No, I would say not.
And then about a week later, I see the name Dacre Stoker, and I said, "Now surely that's not a relative of Bram Stoker. You know who Bram Stoker is, right?"
Oh, yeah.
You know, he wrote Dracula.
Sure, Dracula.
So I sent him a message. I said, you relative of Bram Stoker's, I love Dracula. So 3 days later, I got this really nice little, he added me as a friend, and we've since become great friends. Now,
that's pretty cool.
That didn't happen by accident. It happened because I'm kind of the paranormal guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't care who knows it. It's what's happened. It was amazing when George Gershwin told me that he was actually the reincarnation of Mozart. They both had amazingly short lives, and they were both unbelievably accomplished musicians. But then comes the best one. Then he told me that he had been reincarnated twice in this past century. And you will be absolutely shocked to know who the other reincarnation is. It's Freddie Mercury of Queen.
Okay.
One of the most accomplished musicians that ever played pop music. And then I started thinking about his song Fat Bottom Girls and Bicycle and some of those great songs, and I realized they could just as well have been in his opera, The Magic Flute. And it was just like, I mean, what this entity was telling me had to be the truth. It wasn't lying to me. I mean, it was unbelievable. So there you got it on Scary Cat. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I live in the most interesting paranormal world. And then Matt and I met at the first Tennessee Bigfoot conference. We didn't particularly like each other, but everybody else was so nasty to Matt and me that we became friends. Do you remember that, Matt?
Yeah. People don't like to hear the truth,
man. I hate
to us that we started.
I hate when I go places like that.
Well, I loved it because those folks are gone out of the Bigfoot world, and me and Matt are here, along with Robin McRae and Jessica Jones and our whole bunch. I mean, it's like those guys, I've never seen people exit a world so quickly as Bill and Sam and a couple others whose last names I won't mention. Am I right, Matt?
Yeah.
They exited.
There's a lot of drama.
Yeah. There's a lot of people
anyway,
that seem convinced that's part of the deal, and I don't know. Those people always
weird
tend to weed themselves out.
Yeah, I don't pay attention.
Ron, I've never seen Ron. Matt, I'm gonna make one more statement. I've never seen it happen so fast. It happened in 2 days. Matt and I.
That's cool.
Matt, are we still talking?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think so.
Instant karma.
Well, yeah, it is. And, like, that's what welcome to my life.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of one of those things, too, where people that wrong me, they end up, the karma ends up taking them out. I don't have to do anything to make it happen. It just happens. And I don't mean taking them out like death or whatever, but it just takes them out of my life. Like something bad happens to them to where I never have to worry about them again. It's really odd. Anybody that's ever tried to go after me and was in the wrong always seems to be on the losing end of karma. I just let it play.
All right. Well, that's looks like someone's trying to help us all.
Yep. Definitely.
All right. Well, now, Ron, we have 16 minutes left on this amazing edition of Scary Cast. Why don't you close with a great paranormal story of yours?
Well, let's see. What is my other good paranormal event that I can talk about? Let's see. How about the another subject that I think is still tied, but I had a strange UFO encounter that three or four of my friends, same friends that saw that. What's that?
I said, oh, cool.
Yeah,
this is
definitely.
Great.
The same friends that were with me when that apparition happened, they were with me then. And this was actually at Floyd's Fork Park. So this is directly across the street from the famous Goatman Trestles. It's an area of high strangeness. I've been telling people that for years. There's been all kinds of crazy things that happen around there. It's about dusk in midsummer. And, that time of year, there's always one really bright star in the sky that's not actually a sky. It's Venus. Well, for some reason that night, I noticed another bright light down south from where Venus was at. So I pointed out to my friends, I'm like, what is this star in the sky? You know, it's not quite dark yet, and Venus is out. I said, so that's not Venus. What is this over here? And we're trying to figure it out, and as we start talking about it and pointing at it, whatever, it zooms across the field. So we realized that it wasn't as far in the sky as I thought it was. It was actually a couple hundred yards away, just sitting there. It zooms across the field at a super amount of speed, then makes a dead stop in midair. It then takes off towards us, zooms across another couple hundred yards, zooms past us, back around us, over towards the Floyd's Fork Creek itself, and goes back out to where it was at, stops again, and it sits there for about maybe 20 seconds. And then it takes off, and it zooms way up into, like, the atmosphere almost. That's what it seemed like, until it was out of view. And it did that at such a speed, like a meteor, or even faster than a meteor would travel. And this ball of light was probably the size of it was bigger than a beach ball. It was almost like a medicine ball size, and it was an orange color initially, but as it became closer down to the ground towards us, it almost started to burn more of a yellow-red towards a reddish color. And but it left a trail, like a streak through the sky. It was amazing. And just to really think about that, it's right in the same area where all the Goatman legends happened, and several Bigfoot sightings have also been seen in that same area. It all just kind of ties it together. But and the two guys that were with me, you know, they still talk about that to this day. They're like, man, at that time we were out at Floyd's Fork Park, and that UFO was flying all around our heads, and we thought it was a star. I'm like, yeah, I remember that. I was like, man, why does weird stuff seem to follow you around? We only see this shit when we're with you. I said, I don't know, man. It's just always been that way. One of those guys all the time. The other two I'll talk to occasionally, but we don't see each other or hang as much. But one of them's still one of my best friends. I talk to him about once a week. He just laughs at me. He's like, man, I just never know what I'm going to hear when I call you. He's like, there's always so much shit going on around you and near you and you're into. He's like, I just call you just to see what's going on. But so it's like people that have opened their minds like we have and allow these things to happen, they just intensify. It's almost like they compound off each other. I call myself a spiritual conduit because things happen to me all the time, every day. In fact, if something doesn't happen to me, I'm surprised. Now, a lot of times, I'll have a couple of uneventful days here and there. It's just odd, the amount, like, not only weird electrical disturbances and things of that nature, but if I go in places, it's like, people flock to me. People flock to me, and they feel compelled to tell me their life story. I mean, even somebody I'm just passing in a Walmart will want to stop me and tell me things that normal people wouldn't even tell anybody. And I guess I'm just one of those guys that looks like that's what I wanted them to do. And, you know, I don't mind it. It's interesting. It's a little odd sometimes. And sometimes they'll tell me things that just blow your mind. But I don't know. It's a strange path I've been on for a long time. And I just try to – you can't really navigate it in 100% control, so you just kind of ride the wave like a surfer and see what comes next. But I still try to keep myself grounded in positive things. I still have a firm belief in my creator. I don't really believe in organized religion per se. It's just not my thing, but I do know that there is a higher power. I guess I look at it more out of a Native American kind of a viewpoint of the creator. And so there's days where I know that I've just got in touch with something that's evil. I'll come home and I'll pray and pray and pray and bless myself and sage myself. And then there's days where you meet things that are really positive. And, you know, I was raised Southern Baptist, so my mother was always in the belief that if it wasn't of God, it was of the devil. But I've come to find out that there are things out there that aren't either, and I don't know what they are. But, you know, there's things that aren't really bad, and they aren't really good. They're just kind of there, like lost entities and forces of some kind that, I know, for every yin, there's a yang, but there's also a middle ground of something that's kind of both or neither. If that makes any sense.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah,
that's a great story.
Yeah, so
anyway,
just
that's
one of the
many things.
Cool.
That's really cool. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, there's lots of strange things out there. And Matt, I'm going to let you have the last word because we got 7 minutes. So the last word comes to you. Of course, I'll have a last word too. But that's Matt, are you there?
So the way I see it, like you was talking about, how strange events around certain people. Okay, we're programmed for one channel from birth. And then as you experience stuff, some people experience stuff and it opens up these other channels. And you can tune in. There's more going around on around us. So people like me,
yep,
and you, that's why we catch all this other stuff, because we're just not tuned into one channel. We're tuned into multiple channels, kind of like radio. You got the different,
yep,
frequencies, different channels, and our consciousness level is higher. So we can experience more of the, I guess you could say, paranormal side of it.
Right. Yeah.
So we have evolved up now. That's why we walk around with like a light bulb above our head, because some of these things, they know, hey, this one's at a higher level. They can relate to us. These things are all around us at all the time. But some people, like I said, you have to get up to that higher level, I believe, to experience some of this stuff. Or attract it anyhow. I don't think you have to be at that level to experience it, but to attract it, I believe you have to be at a higher level of consciousness, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah. I agree totally. You know, and in 2000, the year before I saw Bigfoot, I died. I didn't die for long, but I died, and I had the full tunnel at the end of the light experience, the out-of-body experience. I could see myself laying there. And then somebody told me I wasn't done and put me back in my body. But it felt like after that day, everything amplified 10 times. It's like once I crossed over and came back, I brought something with me, like another part of that dimension that it's been even more active ever since then. And I've heard other people
I've heard a lot of people that I had to have my Bigfoot, monster, whatever you want to call it, encounter to wake me up, because I'm stubborn as hell. Everybody knows that. And I had to have something traumatic like that to open up, say, wait a second, you know, I'm looking at something that's not supposed to exist, and then it just opened up more channels.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost exactly a year after I died is when I saw Bigfoot face-to-face for the first time. You know, I'd heard it many times over the years, but one never showed itself to me until then. Who knows if that's coincidence or not? Probably not.
Well, I'm gonna tell you something. When I was 5 feet away from a Bigfoot, that is the most terrified I have ever been. And you know what? The only thing I could say is, surely this is not happening to me. It's like,
yeah. I can see that.
It was unbelievable. It's not, I mean, I couldn't figure it out. So anyway, look, both you guys, it's been great to have you. Matt, of course, we'll be back with you next week. Ron, can we have you back here on ScaryCast?
Yeah, I'd love to come back. So
as we now officially lead into Ground Zero, starring Clyde Lewis, which will premiere tomorrow night at 10 p.m. right here on the one, the only ScaryCast. We're so proud of it. It's already posted. It's pinned to the top of our at our Facebook page. We're going to go through a redesign. So happy that my friend Ron Palmer, that obviously Facebook put right in my lap, he's the one that just said, well, we need you to do this, and thank you. We want you to come back on Ground Zero. I said, well, I got a new book coming out. I'll come talk about that. I'll come talk about Frogman. So February, I want to announce it. It is Frogman Month here at Scarycast. Doesn't that sound like fun?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know I do run the Frogman Festival in Cincinnati. It's kind of crazy, isn't it? But look, I want to thank both of you guys. It's been so much fun. And I want to have you back again, Ron. And we want to have you back next week. We'll have to cogitate and see what we're going to do as we lead into the one and only Clyde Lewis Ground Zero, the top-rated paranormal podcast in the world. So proud that Scarycast is first. We're very happy. We're going to see everybody next week, Monday night for Scarycast, Tuesday night for Scarycast Tuesday. And then, Wednesday night will be Pop Culture Star. Thursday night will be To Be Announced. So, look, thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. I'm going to do the call. I do a call around of the hosts and the guests after it's over to just make sure everybody's okay. So we'll talk to you later. So have a good one for the one, the only, if I can find it, the one, the only Scarycast. Where is our – Ron, you made our theme song disappear.
Yep.
You made our theme song disappear. Why did you do that?
We're high strangeness that surrounds me.
Well, it really does. Because that theme song is not in this list. What are you doing to us? It is. Well, we'll pretend that we've heard the theme song is the extra, and we'll talk to everybody next week. Everybody say goodbye now.
Good night.
Have a great week, guys.